Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Pick it. We've done that then. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they sink sardines. Will be strong into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take him, Bowson. I mean that. Take him.
Welcome back. I'm Richard Keys.
And I'm Andy Gray.
You are? Yeah. Hope is the word that springs to mind this week, Andrew, as a vaccine to COVID begins to be given. I think I'm right in saying that. We were recording Friday, I think overnight Thursday, first vaccines arrived in the UK. So I hope by now people are receiving said vaccine and we can get back to normal sooner rather than later, beginning to open up corners of our life that we'd forgotten about. Football. Actually took a step nearer this week, did it not, with the return of fans?
Yeah, that was great news.
Are we happy with some stadia receiving fans and others not?
I think we have to accept that the situation we're in, it's not perfect, and ideally, if it was perfect, then all clubs should be allowed fans or no clubs should be allowed fans. But I do think that we have to accept that some areas are safer than others, and therefore, to encourage fans back, it's very, very important for me, Richard. It's important for it's the lifeblood of football, a football fan. And therefore, some clubs might not like it, but I think we have to. In the same way we don't like the pressure they're all under to play so many games, we've just got to suck it up.
Yeah, I would like to see. I mean, I have to say, I'd like to see all or none.
Yeah.
But I accept that some is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
And particularly at Wickham this week, who, since we talked to Neil Harmon in podcast one about his book, celebrating their promotion out of League One, if you remember. They've become my favourite second team. they're having a real go at it in League One. 1,000 or so supporters turned up to see them play this week. They lost to Stoke.
I saw that.
But the success of that sees them hopefully being able to double that number for the game against the Super Sky Blues, which is upcoming. And let me tell you, they will need them because we are just beginning to find our legs in that league.
Well, you're in the bottom six.
Yeah, I know, but we're not in the bottom three. And this past week, we went into these games just outside the drop zone. We're now six from the bottom. What are you doing?
Well, my cup keeps hitting the thing, my microphone. Sorry.
talking of frustration, anger, which some are about the Chris Wilder being one of them, the decision to let fans in some stadium and not others. Jurgen Klopp and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer making their views very clear on the amount of football that is currently being played, especially Klopp, or at least the scheduling of the football that their teams are being asked to play in amongst the European competition. Solskjaer screaming the week before last, United are being set up to fail with a 12:30 kickoff. Shut up. Absolutely right.
Absolutely nice.
Anyway, listen, whatever you feel about those subjects and others, you can follow us. Pass comments, please, at Keys and Gray Pod, Keys and A-N-D, Keys and Gray Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. If you're a new listener, a big welcome. Do subscribe, please, as it means we just appear on your chosen pod platform every week. And if you're enjoying, then please rate us and leave a review, as it makes it easier for others to find us. You're very kind in that respect.
Absolutely.
Now, I had a number of different things planned for this week.
Yeah.
Woke up this morning, Friday, read the Times. David Ellery, VAR is here to stay. David Ellery, who is a senior man at IFAB.
Yes.
So I started to read this and thought, do you know what? I'm going to have to run this past Andy today. So I'll save the chosen subject of this week for another time, which was...
What was it?
How many times have you been asked, do you regret not taking Everton? And how many times in your own life have you regretted not taking Everton? But don't go anywhere near that now. We'll save that for another time. David Ellery, I think if there was no VAR in future, there would be uproar, he says in this conversation.
Can I give you my first chuckle of the day then?
Yes.
Yeah, well done, David. Are you sure?
Criticism of how... I'm just going to read you various paragraphs as we go through and get your reaction. Yeah. Okay, criticism of how VAR is being used is particularly strong in England. I wonder why.
I wonder why. The biggest, most important league in the world, most watched league in the world, more eyes are on it. So
I'll add two things. One... We are interpreting the laws of the game our own way.
Oh, David Ellery's way, you mean?
No, Mike Riley's.
Oh, Mike Riley's.
Mike Riley's.
All right.
We're interpreting, and I think that with Riley in charge, the standard of our referees has plummeted dramatically.
Now we do.
Where
agree
are the Clattenbergs? Where are the Webbs? Where are the people that the rest of the world used to look at and go, do you know what? I want to be him.
Yeah.
We haven't got any.
No.
We just haven't got any.
No, we
They're
haven't.
Scared, Andy.
But that's
They're
what
scared
VAR
of making
is
decisions
like.
On the pitch. Yeah. And I repeat, at this early stage of this conversation, please, whoever you can talk to about it, do and join us. The one big change, because it's not going away.
No, it's not.
But the
Sadly,
one big change they can give us that will help all of us and dispute my belief, still in England, that referees are being told by Stockley Park on the way to the monitor what decision to make. We want to hear the conversation that goes on between base and the referee.
Yes.
And it would have helped this week. Would have helped this week in the Champions League. How did Fred not go off?
I've got no idea. I mean, goodness me.
I'm sorry.
Goodness me.
We need to hear those conversations.
And when you say not go off, you're talking obviously about the headbutt.
Yes.
Not the one he got sent off on
half. He should have gone for the headbutt.
Yes, of course he should. Of course he should. And I've got no idea.
And I'd like to know why he didn't. And I'd like to know what that conversation was.
Yeah.
And I think we have a right as viewers, broadcasters, fans... paying supporters, eventually, when we can, we have a right to access that. Why should that be a private club of members only that get to hear those conversations?
It shouldn't.
Nonsense.
It will come. And the good news for you, and I guarantee you, it will come. The groundswell of pressure on them to do that, Richard, will overcome them at some time. But they will, as I said to you, they will go into it and they will be kicking and scratching to the very day it has to be done. That's what they do. They want to keep the secrecy. They want to keep it to themselves, and they shouldn't.
Only Graham Scott this year has gone to a monitor and stayed with his original decision. He was the ref at Spurs where there should have been a foul given on Højbjerg. He should have given it. Mm. He then saw it, should have given it, and I think was told to give it. And he said, no. Do you know, he hasn't been seen for three match days.
No.
He's had the board twice as fourth official.
Ridiculous.
According to this piece today... Lucas Brudd, who is
who's he?
Secretary of IFAB.
Right. These are the lawmakers, are they?
Yeah. He says.
See, this is what worries me about their game. You're reading things, the lawmakers. Why are these people the lawmakers?
I'll get round to that. The most calls, Brudd says, is we receive from England. We get 20 calls from England for every one or two from Spain or Germany. Well, maybe the system works better in Spain or Germany.
Yeah, it doesn't work in England. It hasn't worked in England since day one.
He means mostly from the media. But the game is tying itself in knots, he says. Well,
does he not listen? Sorry, does he not listen to the footballers who in the last 2 months or 3 months or 4 months or 5 months have come on TV and damning VAR, saying it's destroying the game, it's killing the game, we're
Andy
losing
Robertson,
the love for the game,
De Bruyne.
James Milner, Jordan Henderson.
Yeah. Well, they address this. Brudd goes on to talk about the number of people that take part in IFAB's football and technical advisory panels. Luis Figa, Wenger, Boban, amongst others. Shelley Kerr, coach of Scotland's women, is one of those with a voice. But there aren't enough women voices in this panel, Brudd goes on to say. We don't emerge from a cave once a year with tablets of stone, says David Ellery. It's
really?
Much more democratic than that.
Wow, that will surprise people. Goodness.
What is handball?
Oh, sorry, can I just say something as well when you talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
There's another one. Jack Grealish. We talk about players. Jack Grealish, and I'm reading the Mail Online today. Jack Grealish calls to get rid of VAR. Sorry, there's another one.
Well, professional footballers are, I think, of a one mind with that, Andy. But unfortunately, the lawmakers are not going to let us. So they've got to allow us then to have our own way when it comes to listening. Because another thing on that, match fixing is rife. As much as we don't want to admit it, match fixing remains a major problem. Far Eastern based, major syndicates making huge amounts of money. What easier way to fix a match? And I'm not saying it's happened.
No, I know.
Not saying it's happened, but I'm saying it's likely to happen. What easier way to fix a match than to nobble the VAR operative? Mm. That's why we have to hear the conversations.
Correct.
As much as anything else.
Sorry, another one. Scott McTominay. Get football back to the way it was. Demand Scott McTominay. There you go. Are these people IFAB? Are they blinkered? Do they have no ears? Do they not hear and see what?
No.
Not just people like you and I who watch the game.
No.
Now, do they not hear the people who are actually playing in it and actually say, maybe they've got
a point. Want to change football. They want it to be black and white.
No, they don't want to lose their jobs. Richard Partey as well.
Well, that's part
I
of
mean,
it.
I mean, it's like who regulates them? Who regulates the Monopolies Commission? There is only one. It's like that. I feel like IFAB are a bit like that. Yeah. You know, who regulates IFAB? Does someone else from outside say to IFAB, you've got to... No, they don't. They regulate themselves.
Ellery accepts that it was a mistake trying to come up with a precise definition of handball. Really?
Really?
The attempt to make it clearer has been interpreted in different parts too rigidly, he says, especially, of course, in England.
That's his fault.
It appears that referees have been getting it wrong frequently. The handball against Joel Ward, Palace Everton, which drove Roy Hodgson to apoplexy, was a classic example of making any arm away from the body punishable with a penalty. Well,
that's their fault. They're the ones that said it. If it is your arm, when your arms have made your shadow,
no,
your silhouette bigger, it's a penalty.
It's not. Yes and no.
That was the initial.
But it's from. It's also, according to Mike Riley, from beneath the armpit to a point at the top of the arm, not the shoulder. The guidance is being changed to allow more scope for referees to exercise their judgment, says Ellery. So what is deliberate handball?
It's not a deliberate handball though anymore, is it?
Well, deliberate is just that. Secondly, he says, if you score directly with your hand, deliberately or accidentally, that's handball.
Okay, I get that. Well, that's a goal.
We accept that.
Yeah, we
accept
that.
The third area, and I think this is where around the world there has been too much inflexibility, they have to make a judgment if the hand or arm, when it makes contact with the ball, is in a position that is reasonable, then that's fine. But that's open to interpretation.
Of course
isn't
it is.
It? Can that position be justified by the player's movement for that phase of play? Patrick Bamford at Crystal Palace?
Yes, pointing.
Absolutely. We don't want players running Ollie around
Watkins,
like penguins
Ollie Watkins,
with their
West
hands
Ham,
in their pockets.
Pointing.
Absolutely.
You get penalised for pointing where they want to. Get off. I'm sorry.
What's happened to clear and obvious? Okay. So Ellery addresses this as well.
Oh, good. Well done.
The questions the VAR base and referee must ask themselves is not, was the decision correct?
Oh, really?
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
The question is, was the decision clearly wrong? Now, I can think of three incidents recently, two penalties from the week before last that were overturned, that were nailed on, that nobody would have concerned themselves about had they been given.
No.
And one at Brighton, which Liverpool were victims of, where Andy Robertson brings down Danny Welbeck, allegedly. And again, nobody would have complained had play been waved on. None was clear and obvious enough to be sent to VAR. Do you agree?
100%. And so does every referee who's commentated on them, or commented on them, sorry, Richard, that I've seen. Apart from the referees that who work for the VAR, of course.
So a clear error is defined as a decision where almost everyone, players, coaches, media, fans, etc., would agree that it was obviously wrong with little or no discussion or debate. The referee would immediately change the decision while looking at the video replay. In other words, Richard,
but that's, I mean, even that in itself, how do you expect 1,000 people who are watching that one incident to all agree, well, yeah, how would they describe it as?
I'll read on. In other words, not the sort of disputable penalty given against Robertson for catching Danny Welbeck's foot. Really? Well, we said that at the time.
Yes.
Which had to be watched repeatedly to spot minor contact, a case of trying to be perfect rather than giving the game what it wants and expects. Oh, it doesn't need to be referred.
No. And by the way, when he goes on about minor, did you know the laws of the game? Because I'm sure the laws of the game state there doesn't even have to be contact for a penalty to be awarded.
Well, if you remember all the way back, it was Stephen Gerrard, Sheffield United. Rob Stiles.
Yes.
There was intent there. No, there wasn't. Yeah. Stephen dived.
Yep.
Is offside always a matter of millimetres? Holland's Eredivisie has gone rogue. The VAR measures offside using the 5-centimetre Hawkeye lines for an attacker and defender. But if those lines touch, the final decision remains with the on-field officials. Well, isn't that what we've been saying?
Yes,
just
for 2 years.
If it's obvious to the naked eye.
For 2 years.
Just get on with it.
Get on with it. Yes. Staggering.
That can avoid microscopic measuring, but not all. And it introduces the possibility of technology showing a player was onside when the goal has been denied because a linesman's flagged. Well, that's another problem.
But listen, Richard, that's fine. I think people accept that. But what they'll do, the linesmen, they won't flag. This is what we're saying. They won't flag. And that's why they're not getting any better. They know that they have got the back support or the backdrop of, I don't need to flag here, actually, because I think he's offside, but I'm going to keep my flag down. Because if he scores, it'll just go to VAR and they'll make their decision.
Referees are scared to make decisions.
Of course they are.
Because they know they've got backup.
Absolutely.
So what the owner should be back on the match day ref to make decisions. And if the error is unseen and we goal Sheffield United at Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more clear and obvious than that?
No.
Well, was there?
No.
So that's what it's for.
And by the way, we didn't even need lines at Aston Villa. We didn't need 600 cameras. You could see from the one camera covering the game from the halfway line, the ball was over the line.
Well, they are moving towards, as we have been saying here, both on the podcast and on BeIN Sports, they are moving towards technical offsides.
Do you think VAR, right, has got rid of the inconsistency in officials' refereeing?
In a word?
Yeah.
No.
Well, there you go.
I think it's increased the problem because it's highlighted it.
They told us. And by the way, when David Ehrlich comes out and Mike Riley comes out and says, well, there you go, and they will this year, wait for it, the end of this season, and they will turn around and say to all of us...
Before you say anything...
Who thinks we're fools.
Before you say anything...
Yes.
Is VAR here to stay? For all the criticisms... The system continues to spread. I think if there was no VAR in the future, there would be uproar, says Ellery. Pre-pandemic, more than 100 countries and competitions were using it or planning to use it, believing the benefits outweigh everything else.
No,
no,
they're using it because they were told. FIFA were saying, we're implementing a VAR, so you better get it into your leagues. It's as simple as that. It will be in the Champions League. It will be in the Europa League. It'll be in the Euros. It'll be in the World Cup. So if it's in all of them and FIFA are telling you, then of course you have to implement it. But they're not. People are not doing it because they want it.
Are you looking forward to the introduction of technical offsides?
Okay. Well, when's that coming in?
I think the progress is such that it'll be probably the start of next season.
Oh, dear.
And then we'll know.
Oh, well. honestly. Keys, it does my head in that we have to sit here so many times just talk about this VAR. I mean, we used to just spend a Monday or a Friday before talking about maybe a referee's decision. That was a close call, but you know, you can understand why you might have got it wrong. Blah, blah, blah. It's accepted. Fans that accepted it. Players accepted it. Coaches accepted it, having had a little moan up or two. But now it's just more and more because we were told VAR will remove all doubt. No. Wrong.
There was such a dramatic demand from everybody that it was inevitable it would come. And I refer you back to what I used to say when we were on the radio. I was against goal line technology, not because it wasn't going to help us. It has, occasionally. Mm-hmm. Don't know whether the investment has been worthwhile. And the biggest one to date, I refer you back to again, was Villa Sheffield United. Didn't help us there. But I knew it would lead to the introduction of more video. And I think it's been to the detriment of our game. And I dislike it intensely. I love watching Championship football because it's pure.
That's pure.
And the time when we used to go to a game and say, do you know what? Ref did well today. Didn't notice it.
Didn't notice it.
That's gone.
We did that as players.
Yes.
We did that as players.
The most significant people now for a game of football are, well, actually, the most significant person is the man at Stockley Park.
Correct.
The VAR referee.
Yes, the VAR
and the man on the pitch. So somehow, referees who were last pick in the playground.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't play,
yes.
Have elevated themselves to being the most important thing on a match day.
Yes.
That cannot be right.
No, totally wrong. Totally wrong. And another thing, I'm going to congratulate you, by the way, for your spot last week at the Villa game against West Ham United.
Go on.
When at Ollie Watkins' goal. When you're saying, hold on, VAR disallows it, but why didn't VAR give a penalty for Ollie Watkins?
Why didn't it?
We're just seeing people like Carragher, Jamie Carragher, Dean Smith, and others are just saying, sorry, where was VAR when Ollie Watkins got pulled back in the penalty area?
The only reason he's offside is because he's trying to get out of being held. He was held more from the original pen.
But you see, that will be a decision that VAR will say, we got that right. And what I was going to say, quickly, they will tell us next year, we have had 95% of decisions right.
No. 97.5, 98, because they were at 95 without it.
Right.
And of course, the only people producing those figures are the people that produce those figures. Correct. It's not an independent panel looking at it. I wish they'd come to us, because I can tell you, probably this weekend, 95% of the decisions you make will be wrong.
Well, last weekend, they've had belters since we came back, though, haven't they?
Shall we introduce the guest?
Yeah, go on.
This is a young man who whose career ended this past week, retired.
Wow. I remember that.
We were around
not
to see
a good
it's,
day.
No, it's not a good day. We were around to see it starting, and it's not easy being son of, whoever you are the son of, because you're always compared to them. Paul Dalglish had it tough. I mean, Andy Townsend was son of and went on to eclipse his dad's career.
Frank Lampard.
You're always going to be right for the allegation of, you know. So to make it as the son of, I think, is admirable. I really do. And our guest this week is the son of
Steve Bruce.
Alex Bruce, how are you?
I'm okay, chaps. How are you?
Very well, Alex. Very well indeed.
There are significant moments in a man's life, gentlemen, when, and a professional life also, you're hit over the head like a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
I remember this young man playing football in my back garden.
I get hit over the head with his old man a few times. With so much a sledgehammer.
With his old man. And this
big head to hit.
Oh, it wasn't half. It was a belter, Alex.
I think he was about 13, 14 and played well. And he kept sitting his old fella down. And he muttered, Brucey Sr. muttered to me at some point, if he keeps doing that, he's going to feel the reducer. And now, now I read Alex Bruce, go to Wikipedia, Alex Bruce, footballer, retired.
I know.
How on earth can that happen?
Because you're old.
Jeez.
I know.
How does it feel? How has it been, Alex? How's it been since the announcement?
Well, you know yourself, Andy, it's the worst day ever, isn't it, for a professional footballer when it's all you've known for 20 years. And since I was 16, I was fortunate enough to go in, and I'm just 36 now. So I've had a decent innings. I would have liked it to carry on maybe another year. I felt as if I was fit enough to do it. But unfortunately, with the lack of opportunity, the age I was at, and obviously the way the pandemic is at the minute, especially in the lower leagues where I would have had to probably drop down to play, it was tough. And I just felt as if it was the right time to hang them up.
There's a number of reasons, Alex, we asked you to come on. What and to be serious, Andy's talked about that moment in his life where everything changes.
Yeah,
you're not going to work on a
you
Monday
wake
morning
up for the first morning in 16. Alex says 16 years. Mine's just, I think, 17.
Yeah,
and you're not going to the ground. You're not going to training,
which in itself is a shattering experience. But what about as a lad when you were trying to get through, and at Manchester United, they shattered your dream of being a professional footballer. I think I'm right in saying you were the only one of your group they let go, weren't you?
Yeah, I was 16. I remember it like it was yesterday, and I was just getting to the stage where, and you'll know yourselves, where I was leaving school, and there was a decision to be made whether I was going to go into obviously football or not. And I just presumed, being brought up with Manchester United, which is always the wrong thing to do, by the way, to presume anything in football, that I would just have an easy ride, and it would be I'd go through the academy and I'd leave school and go into the Cliff and where it was at the time, sign up with the rest of the lads on YTS scholars, and I got called to Carrington on a Tuesday night and sat down. We all had 5 minute slots, so all the team were in the canteen, and I got called in about midway down the line, and they just said, listen, we don't know what we haven't got a position for you. We don't know where the future lies with yourself. We think we've got better options, and unfortunately, we're going to let you go. And it was an uppercut. It was the first bit of disappointment I'd ever had, and it was, as you say, absolutely shattered me at the time. It was a real blow.
But you didn't let it adversely affect you. How did you find the mental strength to keep going and find a second option, which, again, Blackburn Rovers, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, for 16, I mean, I remember at the time, I was on Easy Street. I used to live 20 minutes from the training ground, going into to Salford, where they trained, and at the Cliff. And everything was fine. It was great. And I just thought I'd sign and I wouldn't have to leave home. I'm 20 minutes away. And all of a sudden, because all that ended, I had the prospect of leaving home, finding a club, going into digs. It was a real eye-opener for me at the time. And Blackburn gave me the opportunity to go. I left. I went and lived on site. And that rejection, I think, put something in me to think, I'm going to prove these wrong. And looking back now, it might have been the best decision that could have possibly happened to me, because some would say I had a little bit of a silver spoon.
Who would see a thing like that?
For goodness sake, who?
People like you.
Well, not yet. I mean, give us time. We're being serious.
It's only a footballing silver spoon you had, so come on.
Yeah, so obviously going to live in digs with 20-odd lads at the time, and I got put in with a scouser called Michael Cole. I'll never forget it. He was probably the roughest lad there. I think they did it on purpose, where he thought he'll toughen Brucey up a little bit, and he did, and it was a real reality to what football world would be like.
What would you say to young men going through that now, or facing the prospect of going through that now?
Well, I remember an old coach of mine. You might remember him, Bobby Downs.
What an introduction to coaches, Bobby Downs.
Bobby Downs. He was our academy director. Wow. He sat us all down and he said, "Listen, lads, you might think you have made it now and you have done well to get to this point, but look around the room. There's 18 of you in here. Stats will tell us over the years we've been here, probably one of these will make it and have a career at a level, not such as Blackburn Rovers in the Premier League, what they were at the time." And I remember looking around the room thinking, Jesus, one of us, I've got no chance, might as well have my boots up now. There was lads who played for England, and I look back and I think it was myself and Paul Gallagher who've made the career, who were sat in that room that day. And wow. And that's the harsh reality of it. It's a dog-eat-dog world. You've got to be disciplined, even more so now. You've got to live your life impeccably and do everything you can to try and get a career at whatever level you can.
Alex, do you think, like, looking back at what you had to cope with, you almost, like, cope with it on your own? You had your mum and dad, obviously, with the experience of being in football. But do you think the way that the academies are set up now, that young players are given all the tools they need to cope with the disappointment, as you said, that invariably happens to the vast majority of them?
Well, I think we're getting better at it and we're more aware of it. I think there's still work to be done. But like any industry, football's no different. It's ruthless, isn't it? You can be flying high one minute and thinking you're great, and then the next minute you're completely pushed off a cliff. So to deal with that mentally is tough. But I think obviously with the PFA and the stuff that they do now in terms of trying to help players, I do think it's getting better.
I know you've got employment now, but nevertheless, and we'll talk about that later. What was that feeling like, waking up and realizing that actually it was all over and it's not going to happen again?
It's absolutely horrendous. And I only had it last Monday. I lay in bed last Monday and I thought I actually played, ironically, for Crewe against Hull on the Sunday, and I knew it was my last game for Crewe's reserves. And I remember coming off the pitch and thinking, bloody hell, that's it. That's the last game I'll ever play. And it's a horrendous feeling. And you wake up on the Monday morning and you don't go into training and you lay there and you're thinking, well, what am I going to do? Yeah. And fortunately for myself, one of the main reasons why I've hung the boots up is because I've been given this opportunity. But I mean, the thought of not knowing what to do and not having a place to go and work, and it's a really, really difficult one to swallow.
Let me ask, I asked you about the young kids there, Alex, and if they get protection when they're disappointed at the age of 15, 16. What about at the age of 36? Do you think that we just, I can remember thinking when I had my last game, Alex, and woke up that day, I felt like you. I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? And there was nobody to call. There was no support around. There was no experienced person that you could think of. What happens now? What happens with my life? Do you think it's enough done for ex-players when they do retire, who maybe have not played at the highest levels, but have played in the first, second, third divisions? Do you think there's enough support there for them to cope mentally?
Good question.
Well, it's a good question, isn't it? I mean, everybody's different in terms of how they deal with it. I mean, some people are ready to retire, and some people think some people have to do it through injury, and it's kind of been a build-up process. And other people have to retire because they can't get a club. And I think it's them ones who still feel like they have the legs and the ability to do it. I'm fortunate, I'm 36, but there's lads out there who are 28, 29, 30 now who are struggling. I think they're the ones who need the real help, because it is a massive disappointment in their lives. And you can understand why you've seen instances where people turn to drink and gambling and all these kind of things to try and fill that gap. And I do think the PFA, we have meetings all the time to say they're always there for you. I think my opinion is, if you need help, obviously go and approach the governing body and try and do something that's going to give you something to strive for, whether it be a job in, I don't know, a labour or anything. They can do anything just to get you out of the house.
Occupy
and give you something to focus your mind on. Yeah.
And you've now gone to the dark side. You've taken up football agency, haven't
what?
You?
What?
Yeah.
You're joking. Yeah. He's an agent. What's your turn, gamekeeper? Is that one of those? Is he?
It is, yeah. I said to my new bosses, I don't want the tag of an agent. I do not want it. I've had enough of them. I'm a mentor. That's my role.
You're a mentor. Okay, right. All right. Well, I like that. Let's give them a plug. Who are you working for?
I'm working for USM. They were based down in London. I met Will Salthouse and Barry Whelan the week before I announced my retirement, and they've got a nice office in Winslow, and
very nice.
They want me to kind of come in here and work with the players that they've got, and they've got some good players. I'm just looking around the office now at the shirts and the players that they've got, and it's just something where I just think it was a good opportunity for me. And as you say, it gives me something to get up for in the morning and something to work towards. So it was a good opportunity for me.
Listen, let's go all the way back. What was it like growing up as the son of the captain of Manchester United?
God, I wish I had a pound how many times I've been asked that question.
Of course.
Listen, I was so privileged. I mean, I look back at the memories that we had. I mean, coming down and sharing a studio with you guys and sitting behind the cameras wasn't a bad thing for a kid to experience. And watched some great games over the years, but to go to Old Trafford and see the great players what they had at the time, and be on the trains on the way back from Wembley with the FA Cups after they'd won it, and Premier League parties round our house.
I mean, presumably, Alex, you didn't just go to Old Trafford and meet the guys. Are these stories true of you and Kasper Schmeichel playing football in the back garden? That, I mean, some of the guys must have come round at different times, surely.
Yeah, they all did. I mean, I remember when they won the league the first time, our house was one of that
was
film
that
night Project
that was, X. Was that the night there was the empty sofa there and we showed the empty
sofa? No, that was an entirely different night. They were all getting... I tell you that night was...
What?
They were all so pissed for the night against Blackburn. For 45 minutes, they were hopeless.
they were. And the party went on. It was ridiculous. Me and Casper were sat in Peter's house next door, sat on the windowsill, I'll never forget it, thinking, how long is this party going to go on for? It was more like 6 o'clock in the morning, it was still going.
27 years was a long time.
Yeah. So it was good times. And we lived next door to each other. And Kath and I probably learned our trade out in the street, belting balls at one another, jumping for goalposts and all that.
Well, you must have been the last generation to have been able to do that, because that doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No.
Well, we don't have the PlayStations and the. I was just a little bit too old to remember all that
sounding,
stuff.
You're actually trying to convince us that you're old, aren't you? I mean,
36.
I'm not as old as you.
He's 36.
I'm from a different generation. Yeah. He's trying to persuade me that life was different. Listen, I grew up in a household where a good meal was sugar on buttered bread.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You want to go down that line?
I don't even get the sugar.
I look at what the kids have now, though. I see my girls on the iPad, the bloody and everything, and I think, Jesus, we didn't have them stuff in when I was a kid. You know what I mean? We were kicked out in the street.
Yeah, well, an apple and an orange in those days was a very different thing, Alex, than it is now.
I just can't get my head around this image of he's complaining like we do.
Aye.
And he's half our age.
Aye.
I mean, listen, we've got a surprise for you. We thought we'd go to the you probably expected it. We're going to call the old man for you so that he can join us and have a part conversation. Oh, here we go.
Come on, then.
He'll be there. Right. Brucey, are you there, son? Why no game tonight?
Well, you know, Richard and Andy, I'm very happy to be on the show, but I've got to say, look, I've got to be very honest with you. I had the Aston Villa game cancelled. I rang the Premier League up and said, look, it's far too dangerous. It's far too risky. Because the last time I went there, I got hit by a load of cabbages on my head. And, you know, that's not what I want. So I've got to be honest, it was me that got it cancelled. For public safety, well, you know.
Brucey, we've got Alex on the phone. We've got Alex on the phone, as you know. Good lad. Yeah. I mean, owes much to you, obviously, as a coach, but as a father as well. I mean, you've been intrinsic in his life down the years.
Well, you know, I tell you what about our Alex. What a player. Absolutely brilliant. And, you know, two reasons why I always signed him. Two reasons I bought him 400 times. And number one, very good player. And number two, the wife would have divorced me if I didn't. Well, you know, that's just the truth, I've got to say. But lovely lad, great lad, really.
Listen, Brucey, good to talk to you. But getting back to football, much has been made of your team's inability to score goals. Have you worked out what's your best two up front yet?
Well, you know, I've got to look, lads, at my options up front. I really have. I've looked around and I feel as though the best two options we've got are Carol and Gail. Carol, lovely girl, works in the canteen, and Gail's a brilliant cleaner, been here for 35 years. Never misses a cup, well, you know. Absolutely brilliant, but looking around, they're the best two options we've got, well, you know.
That's very good of him. He must be busy today as well.
He must be busy. Darren Farley, genius.
Oh,
it's the well, you know.
Does it make you chuckle, Alex, as much as it does us?
What was he like? What was he like to play for, Alex, when you were in that dressing room?
He's better than the old man, really. He's mellowed a lot with his older age, and he's got a lot calmer than what he was when he was younger. But to be honest, Birmingham, I was only there for 5 minutes. The main time I saw him was obviously when I worked with him over a sustained period was at Hull.
Yeah.
And we were lucky, really, because we had a successful spell, so I didn't really experience too many dressing downs, but he's got a decent hairdryer when he wants to, I believe.
Has he? Has he?
All right.
Yeah, you wouldn't really expect it, but he has, yeah. And I think anyone who's worked for him and played for him will probably tell you the same. When he loses it, he's got it in his locker to have a right go.
Can you still do that these days, Alex? Can the coach still use the old hairdryer? Is that allowed, or is that bullying in the workplace?
I think he's put up to mellow, obviously, from what he was when he was younger. But he's I think there's still a place for it from time to time.
Okay. I've got some bad news for you as well. When we started this interview, do you know what the first three words were that you said?
What was that?
Well, you know.
Well, you know. They really were.
It's from you. I keep getting the text messages, well, you know. I keep thinking, what's this, well, you know, all about? Now it's been cemented.
Well, you know. dear. Well, Alex, listen, thank you for talking to us both on a serious basis, because it is the main reason we wanted to talk this morning, the various blows that can come with a full-time professional career. But we also wish you all the very best at stage two of your life now as well. As a mentor.
Thanks, Jeff.
As a mentor.
The good news, I can confirm, Alex, that the good news for you is life doesn't end when you stop playing football. That's the good news.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That's very true. Very true.
Well, you know.
he's good at that, Keezy. He's quite good at that, Alex. I have to say, he's very good.
He is good. Was that him actually on the phone, or was that a recording?
No, that was. We did go to the effort of putting a little production into this. And I thought so.
He wanted. I was about to give him some. I was about to give him a little bit of sick blood now.
Great to talk, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Look after yourself.
Go on, man.
Give the old fella
our
best.
I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah.
Cheers, man.
See you, mate.
Bye now.
Great fun.
Good
Alex
lad.
Bruce,
good lad.
And do wish him all the very best. And once
Absolutely.
Again, thank you to Darren Farley. Do you know, I actually look forward to the Monday morning and the impressions far more than I do listening to the managers, because those interviews now are so anemic.
Yeah.
Nobody's...
Well, of course he's not going to say
Klopp went off last week and it was great. You know, he gets criticised for what he said. But on the other hand, he's saying it. So it gives us all something to talk about. But Farley and Conor Moore, who's another.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Excellent. They're very good.
Much better than listening to the real thing. Anyway, that's it again. I think next week I'll pose that same question I did earlier about the Everton job. How close you were. Because still, I'm with you. I hate to say this, but I'm with you most days.
Yeah.
And it's still a question that comes up. And I've heard your answer many times, but I still think that, Andy, because it's such a popular question, many want to know. So we will discuss next week.
No problem. Yeah, okay. Can do that.
So that's it. I hope you've enjoyed. Thanks once again to Alex Bruce and Darren Farley. If you want to get in touch, you can via Twitter and Instagram. You can follow and pass comment at Keys and Gray Pod. Keys, A-N-D, Keys and Gray Pod, as I said, both on Twitter and Instagram. We look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, look forward to next week.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.